Welcome, listeners, and thanks for your company. I'm Phil Pennington, and this is Top End Doctors. Top End Doctors is a series of programs where I interview doctors and medical staff from the Townsville University Hospital. On today's program, I'll be interviewing Dr. Renoma Orhe, who is a neurosurgeon in Townsville. Today's subject is metabolic therapy and its effects on the brain. It's a fascinating subject where Dr. Renoma will put this complex subject into easy-to-understand terms for us. So let's go straight to Dr. Renoma, who's in the chair with me today. Welcome, Doctor.
It's great to be back, Phil. I'm glad to be here at Faith FM Studios.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, Doc. I know you're this is your day off, and you've chosen to be here in the Faith FM Studios with myself and also the listeners. To begin with, Doc, can you give the listeners a bit of an insight into your personal history, you know, where you come from, how you ended up in Australia, what got you interested in neurosurgery, that type of thing?
Sure. Yeah, it's quite the journey, I must say. All started with my parents. They left Nigeria, they moved to Malaysia, then to Australia. I came here when I was about 4 years old. And they came here because they wanted to give their children a better life. And yeah, who can blame them? Nigeria was a lot of political turmoil at the time, and they thought the way forward was to move here to Australia. And so throughout the journey, we lived in country Western Australia, and I had really bad asthma growing up as a child, really, really bad asthma, to a point where when I was in Malaysia, they were worried that I wouldn't make it through. So as I was growing up, around when I was 10, 11, there was a really good country doctor who really helped me when I was having an asthma attack. It was just a small country hospital, and he just took care of me as if I was in a world-class intensive care unit. And I really look at that, and I feel very grateful and indebted to the health profession who helped me. And it just planted that seed in my heart as a child to want to pursue a medical career. And then as I was graduating high school, I read a book called Gifted Hands by Dr. Ben Carson. And he really ignited that fire under my belly. And it just made me realize that, you know, the seed of being a doctor, that started when I was 11. But then Gifted Hands made me think, man, maybe I can do what he did. You know, who knows? He had a very similar background as well. He had a very similar
story.
Yeah,
I've actually heard of Ben Carson's. I've got a book at home. It's called Risk-Taking. Responsible risk taking. And he's a neurosurgeon as well, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've got that book at home. I'm just getting ready to read it.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Well, let me know how you go with that.
Yeah.
He's quite an inspiring figure growing up. And so went through the journey of high school. Eventually, by the grace of God, God opened up the opportunity to study medicine, which happened at a time when I gave my life to Jesus. It was a very similar time period. And I just felt that it was a calling from God. God was calling me to go into the medical profession, to be his hands and feet. Mm. And so it was just been a huge step, faith journey, to be honest. Yeah, just going through the journey and God leading me step by step to reach higher and higher and to honor his name by pursuing a neurosurgery career. And I find myself here in a beautiful town, Townsville. I'm working at Townsville University Hospital as a neurosurgery doctor, and yeah, it's very rigorous, but it's very rewarding, and I couldn't imagine being in another field.
Yeah, it's a great establishment, Townsville University Hospital, listeners, up here in the north in Townsville, in beautiful North Queensland. So, Dr. Renoma, can you explain to us what is metabolic therapy?
Great question. Metabolic therapy, it's an emerging therapeutic intervention. And we're talking about today in the context of brain health. It's essentially using nutrition and maximizing the potential of that and exploiting the metabolic constraints of certain disease processes in the brain and using nutrition to exploit that and treating particular disease. So, for example, if we look at the mental health field, there's emerging research. This is all emerging stuff where they look at conditions like schizophrenia and how that it's not just a neurotransmitter disease. And when we say neurotransmitter disease, we say when the nerves communicate with other nerves, to put it simply, they send signals to each other, and there's certain neurotransmitters that help facilitate that. And if you don't have enough of them, you have an imbalance, chemical imbalance, as you've heard, and then you have these mental health conditions. So initially, we've always thought that it's those diseases were strictly kind of mostly primarily associated with that. However, we're noticing that perhaps mental health and other brain diseases have a metabolic component to it, which is about how the body breaks down the food that you eat and maximizes that and produces the fuel in the efficient way possible.
Okay, so the brain somehow is linked to your to what you eat in your digestive system.
Absolutely. And just to put it simply, your brain primarily uses sugar as a source of fuel to do its job. Without that, you're going to have a really hard time to be able to do the daily things that we do in everyday life. You know, think, make complex decisions. You know, that's why, you know, they say it's important to have a good breakfast in the morning to start the day, so as you have that brain fuel, so to speak, to conquer the challenges of the day. And that's primarily just the sugar that is broken down from carbohydrates. That is the main source. But unfortunately, there are certain diseases that also thrive on sugar. So we're thinking certain malignancies and also even deranged, mental health conditions that also thrive on a improper balance of carbohydrates, proteins, and sugars. Now, what we're realizing that, especially in the field that I'm interested in cancer research, we're finding that there's certain brain cancers that are not very flexible. They primarily go through what we call a glucose metabolism that can be done in a what we call a poor oxygen environment. So even if it's in a poor oxygen environment, which is needed for, it's a bit like a combustion, right? You need that injection of air to, you know, produce fuel. Similar to the brain, that injection of air is normally what you need, that oxygen that we breathe in, is normally what you need to produce the glucose for the brain. But even some diseases, they will still prefer glucose even in poor oxygen environments. And that's some diseases like brain tumors, like glioblastoma in particular, which is my research interest, where they are primarily inflexible and they're primarily focused on that. Having said that, what we're trying to see is that the brain actually is more flexible than the disease. It can also rely on what we call ketone bodies. Ketone is an alternative source of fuel that I'm sure you've heard friends and people that have been on a ketogenic diet and they still go about their day and thrive with that. It's not as efficient at producing energy as the standard glucose that the body prefers, but by going on that type of metabolic program, then you starve the disease, if you like, or you realign the architecture of the brain to thrive without needing the sugars that it would typically need to.
You say you kind of cut off its food source.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I believe you are writing a research paper on this subject. Mm. Can you explain what made you research this specific subject, and whereabouts in your research are you up to?
Yeah, so I'm in the early career phase of the neurosurgery program here in Townsville Hospital, and I've noticed throughout my time here so far that the condition that I would say most troubles me is the condition called glioblastoma multiforme, which is a type of brain cancer. It's one of the deadliest cancers known to man. It has a life expectancy, even with maximum treatment, between 3 to 12 months if you go the maximum treatment route on average. And it's your guarantee that when people have this disease, they're guaranteed to relapse at some point if it's the glioblastoma multiforme type. So I noticed that seeing these patients, they come in and, you know, we do these very aggressive surgeries and, you know, the outcomes are still, you know, dismal. And that made me kind of put a burden in my heart to try and find think outside the box and how we can cater to those patients.
Yeah, so you've done all this surgery, you've done all this work, and it's sort of semi-non-productive.
Yeah, like it's not to say that, well, we still offer them, it's life-saving surgery. I would say that. It is life-extending surgery. You know, sometimes we'll get patients that will live up to 12 months if it's the grade 4 type of brain tumor that we're talking about, the GBM for short. But yeah, like I said, it's not moving the needle in a big way. Now, with the metabolic therapy, it's a way of looking at the condition in a nuanced way. Like, what I mean by that is that there was a lecture presented by one of my colleagues just talking about glioblastoma in general, just about the disease and how it works. And one aspect that struck me was that it talks about this deranged metabolism aspect of the disease. And this made me think, though, if perhaps GBM is a metabolic condition. You know, it made me think, what is GBM? Is it purely a genetic?
Sorry, what was GBM again?
It's a short for glioblastoma multiforme, which is that aggressive brain tumor.
Yep.
The deadliest cancer, definitely in our field, and one of the deadliest cancers in medicine. And yeah, it really intrigued me the way my colleague described this disease unintentionally. He was just sharing the pathophysiology of the disease. And it's always raised the question in a fundamental way, is cancer in general purely a process of genetic, you know, mutation, things going wrong in the genes, and then you have this process of uncontrolled growth that we see in cancer? Or is there a what we call metabolic component? In particular, we look at a particular aspect of the cell, not the nucleus, which has the DNA, but the energy house of the cell, which is the mitochondria. Is it a mitochondrial disease as well, not just a genetic disease? So that's my interest at the moment. It's very early stages. We're just, I'm building on the shoulders of giants who have been in the field in other areas, and in particular the mental health field. My supervisor, I'm very blessed and privileged that I have a supervisor by the name of Professor Samia, who is a professor at the James Cook University, which is just across the road from Townsville University Hospital, who's done similar research in schizophrenia, and he had some very interesting results. So he was, as soon as he heard that I was doing a topic on this area, he jumped on board, and so we're working together, and amidst my busy life of being a neurosurgery doctor, it's a challenge. But it's knowing that the potential of how many patients could benefit from this, I'm very excited to explore more on the pathophysiology of this disease, and hopefully find new treatments, whether it's nutritionally based or even some medications that kind of amplify that inflexibility of the GBM versus the normal healthy brain tissue that we see.
Mm. So you're aiming for a PhD out of this, I guess?
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Like, for me, I've always been the kind of person to not to do a PhD for the sake of doing a PhD, because PhDs are a lot of work and a lot of grief.
But this sounds like a very worthwhile
topic
of research.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for me,
beneficial.
I wouldn't do a PhD if I didn't know that my research will make a big contribution to the treatment of a particular disease that is ravaging the world.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But right now, listeners, it's time for a music break. And following our music break, we'll be right back here with Dr. Onoma, where we're talking on the subject of metabolic therapy and its effects on the brain. I'm Phil Pennington. This is Top End Doctors, and you're on Faith FM.
Built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame.
Nice song there by Will Morris entitled Cornerstone. So, Dr. Rama, what are the practical applications of this research? You know, where does the rubber hit the road?
The potential is quite immense. In particular, the type of metabolic therapy that I'm quite intrigued by is the what we call plant-based metabolic therapy. And there's been some preliminary research that's been quite promising, which shows that patients that have been on a ketogenic diet have halted their disease progression in these particular conditions. We've seen it in mouse models in papers that I've looked at. And also there's been some very small studies that have shown very promising life extension. So patients who normally, like I said, 3 to 12 months, they're still alive 36 months, you know, which is a significant extension, considering how aggressive this condition is.
Yeah, so I guess you are what you eat, right?
Yeah. In a very consequential way when it comes to this type of condition. And this is something that I'm fascinated by, because there's a lot of theories that suggest that what if, you know, because the standard ketogenic kind of component is very much reliant on a lot of animal sources to achieve those high fat and, you know, low carbohydrate composition to, in order to achieve ketosis. So ketosis is a state of metabolism where your body has now shifted from the pathway of glucose production predominantly to ketone body production as an alternative fuel source. It doesn't produce as much energy, what we call ATP, as glucose does, but it still does the job and people still survive, like I mentioned before. So what if there's a, you know, because at the end of the day, we've talked about the risk factors of animal sources of food, which can result in unintentional side effects like cardiovascular disease. But also the practical aspect is that if we want this to go global, which is my dream for this study to do, there's some countries like in the Middle East or in other countries where a ketogenic diet is not practical because, you know, the food required to achieve ketosis is not culturally sensitive.
So what foods are essential for this type of diet? What do you need to access?
So the standard kind of mainstream ketogenic diet that is, you know, usually reliably going to produce ketosis is usually very high animal foods, low carbohydrates, or low foods, things like breads, rice, eliminating those type of foods, but eating mostly high fat foods, high animal foods. Now that's the standard protocol of a ketogenic diet in order to make sure that your fat content is very high and carbohydrate content remains low to limit the amount of glucose production. That allows your body to naturally head into ketotic state. However, like I said, it's very high in those animal foods that can lead to other potential side effects, which can't be ignored. So what if there's a similar concept, but using plant foods? What would that, what are the benefits that could occur? And would you eliminate the potential oncogenic factors of animal foods that we've studied about, like insulin growth factor, leucine content? I'm going to use some terms. These are terms that we've known about that we suspect can cause a oncogenic state. In other words, a cancer causing state, which is those animal foods that touch the mTOR protein, which is a protein in cells that allows it to multiply very quickly, are primarily driven by animal sources of food. So that's the going theory. We don't know for sure. This is all cutting edge.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. Mm. What sort of plants are you talking about? Mm. Plant-based foods. What type of plants?
In practicality, it will have to be plants like avocado, like high oily plant foods. Avocados, you know, various types of seeds and nuts that will produce the same oily content or high fat content, but it's plant sources of fat as opposed to animal sources. Mm. So that's, you know, it'll be a diet that is like, you know, olive oil, avocado, you know, there's also, olives, those type of foods that are oily in nature. Whereas reducing the carbohydrate content. So it's a very tailored, as you can see, a tailored kind of diet that will allow your body to enter a ketotic state. But that type of diet will be more palatable in areas of the world where they don't, you know, they're very sensitive to, you know, animal consumption, because you couldn't use a lot of animal foods in countries like in the Middle East, where animals are considered sacred it's not halal or something like that. Yeah. Whereas you still want to give them access to that therapy too. And also there's the potential positive aspect that it's not going to be cancer inducing, but this is all theoretical. And that's why I'm doing this research to see if it's, you know, if it's got potential.
Yeah, that sounds great. Will you be sharing this research with your colleagues maybe and possibly sharing it and giving it to medical journals for publication? And do you have trials in mind? What sort of trials will you be conducting during your research? Is it on animals or is it on human beings?
The ultimate goal is for this to be published. We want to see a randomized controlled trial, but however, we want to see that this actually works first. So what we want to do is we want to do a preclinical prospective, what we call case control study, to kind of see that, do we see those positive effects? Are we seeing this metabolic therapy move the needle, so to speak? Is it actually working? And then to actually get robust information, the gold standard is a randomized controlled trial. So eventually what I want to see is that it's a therapy that's not going to be a replacement of standard of care. We're still going to have surgery. We're still going to have chemotherapy, radiation therapy. But also, what if there's a metabolic component to that where dietitians play a big role in controlling this disease? There's the, you know, people have known for decades that ketogenic diets reduce seizures. That's a known aspect of ketogenic diets on brain health. So there could be a positive side effect of reducing seizures burden as well.
Yeah, so you'll bring a diet or some dietitians on board in the course of your research.
Absolutely.
To advise you.
Exactly. They're going to play a central role because they're the experts. They're the ones that are going to guide and, you know, and help, you know, make this research practical and also flexible for patients who have various nuanced dietary requirements and things like that to cater for everyone. Because what we want is that we want to keep it as open as possible and then divide, as long as we have a good, powerful study in terms of the numbers, to break them down in various groups and see which ones had the survival benefits and things like that. So it's very, very exciting stuff. We want to see it in clinical application, and because that has more weight than animal studies. And we could do it as an animal study, but we thought, you know, let's go, you know, straight to the point and get it rolled out among patients who could benefit from this.
Yeah, it's an incredible study, and I guess maybe the end of the day, the best possible outcome would be to see other hospitals, you know, even overseas, adopting this as a standard practice.
Yes, absolutely. That's the goal. Standard practice, like I said, on top of what we already do, which is maximal safe resection of the tumor when possible, the chemotherapy agents that we already use, the standard care, and the radiation therapy that we do. And then there'll be a fourth component, which is hopefully the metabolic therapy, which will become standard of care. That will be the dream.
Well, hey, listeners, you might be listening today to a possible Australian of the Year if this research is successful and is adopted. Can you imagine that? Australian of the Year, which is not beyond the realms of possibility. I mean, you know, Australian of the Year has been won by people with many different types of achievements, you know, medical and sporting and all that sort of thing. So you may be talking to medical royalty here today.
we'll see about that.
Don't put the cart before the horse. Okay, we've broached this incredibly interesting subject. Whenever Dr. Anoma comes in, he talks about the most interesting things. And I'm sure that our listeners enjoy and listen with anticipation to this wonderful series of programs called Top End Doctors. So, Dr. Anoma, I'd like to thank you again for giving up your valuable time and coming in and sharing your time with me and also the listeners of Faith FM. So, Doc, thank you very much.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Top End Doctors. Check program guides, or better still, why not download the free Faith FM radio app straight onto your phone so you can listen to us anytime, anywhere. I'm Phil Pennington. This is Top End Doctors, and you're on Faith FM, positively different.